Welcome to the Just Pod, a podcast by the Criminal Justice Section of the ABA, the unified voice of criminal justice. Welcome to this episode of the Just Pod. We are joined again today by Stephen Salzberg, Wallace and Beverly Woodbury University Professor of Law at George Washington University School of Law. And Steve is one of two of our CJS delegates and a former chair of the section. And also, Steve, let me congratulate you on your recent award. Steve Salzberg was just honored by the American Bar Foundation by receiving the 2021 Outstanding Service Award from the Fellows of the American Bar Foundation. Very distinguished award. So congratulations on that,
Steve. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us again today, Steve. He's here to walk us through the House of Delegates report from mid-year 2021, which was again a virtual meeting. So now you're experienced at virtual House of Delegate meetings, and we're excited to hear how it went. This time around, CJS co-sponsored six resolutions. And Steve, for our listeners, why don't you go ahead and just help us understand what's the difference between co-sponsoring a resolution and being the primary sponsor of a resolution?
The ABA House of Delegates has basically three categories. One is you're the sponsor. You've actually drafted the resolution and circulated it. You can co-sponsor only if you've had a hand in writing the resolution and the report. Used to be you could just say, oh, co-sponsor us, and you basically had no role in it. The third is support. Any section, any bar association can indicate support for a resolution, which simply means you've considered it, you like it, but you really had no role in it. So the difference between being the principal sponsor and a co-sponsor often is minuscule. And the reason is when we draft a resolution, we circulate it very often. Other entities come back and they say, you know, we like this, or there are parts we have problems with, and we make changes. They become co-sponsors. And in fact, they are essentially co-authors with it. And that's the way it was in all these resolutions, that in order to be co-sponsored, the CJS had to have some role in either drafting the black letter or the report. And so we were active, as you'll see, in midwinter, even though we were not the moving party in any of these resolutions. But we had a big role.
Well, thank you for that. So let's get into these six resolutions. We covered a number of timely topics in these resolutions, which I think will be of interest to our listeners. And let's start with 10F, which speaks to police reform on some level. So Steve, if you would just tell us what that resolution was.
So this is one of two that really was in our wheelhouse, where we have our day-to-day work. Now, it goes back almost 40 years ago. The Supreme Court of the United States said a police officer making a traffic stop may order the driver out of the car during the stop. Then a decade later, the court said the officer may also order the passengers out of the car as part of the traffic stop. Officer doesn't have to have any reason other than the officer's sense that it would be safer for the officer to do that. And this resolution basically calls upon police departments to train their officers in making the decision, exercising the discretion, whether to order someone out of the car. And it basically, resolution arises from a sense and actually some data that show that minority drivers and passengers get ordered out of the car more often than white drivers and passengers. And basically, this is part of something CJS care a lot about, which is the exercise of discretion in ways that don't discriminate either intentionally or unintentionally against minorities. And basically the resolution doesn't tell police departments what criteria to use, but suggests that they train their officers so that the officers can treat like cases alike.
Okay. And the next that I have on my list is a resolution that speaks to the use of attorney general certification process. Is that the right way to introduce it, or am I missing the most important part?
You're doing fine.
Okay.
this is an area, by the way, the reason you're having trouble, this is an area of highly specialized learning. This has to do with immigration law.
Oh, okay.
And while CJS co-sponsored it, in truth, we couldn't have done this by ourselves. The Commission on Immigration and all that, they needed to use their expertise. And essentially, the resolution isn't on the black letter that long, but it calls upon the Attorney General, that will be Merrick Garland if he's confirmed, to essentially issue opinions, which the Attorney General is allowed to do, conforming United States immigration law to congressional intent and consistency with international law. The report goes on at length to point out the number of ways in which immigration decisions that were made by the former administration are inconsistent with congressional intent and inconsistent with international standards. And while the Attorney General can't do everything, certain things can only be changed by legislation. The Attorney General has the authority to issue opinions that the Attorney General authorizes that would essentially conform immigration law to what Congress, in the eyes of the authors, intended and international standards on immigration. It's pretty technical, but very important.
Okay, thank you. So, Steve, the next resolution speaks to abortion in America. So can you help us understand what this resolution was working to address?
Yes, this is not a resolution that takes a position on when abortions should be lawful and not lawful. It basically says that mothers, that is women who are pregnant, should not be prosecuted because the fetus is not taken to term. That is, at some point or other, the woman loses her baby. And the idea here is that every time there is a miscarriage, every time there is an unfortunate incident, that there shouldn't be a criminal investigation, that every pregnant woman in America should not be subject to being investigated, potentially arrested and prosecuted because she loses her baby. And the report makes clear that for the most part, we're not dealing with women who are seeking illegal abortions. We're seeking pregnant women who, for whatever reason, end up not being able to take a baby to term. And it doesn't address, by the way, prosecuting anybody else. It doesn't address prosecuting doctors who might violate the law. It addresses only prosecuting mothers who lose their baby during the course of their pregnancy.
Well, thank you. I had planned a follow-up question, but you spoke to my question already. So thank you so much for that explanation. Because in reading that, I was a little, I needed a little clarification. So thank you for sharing that. I hope that's really helpful for our listeners and an important thing, especially as a woman who this might affect. I appreciate that clarification and understanding better what that is meant to address, an important issue. So thank you. And then the next one I have on my list is 107C, which speaks to military service. Go ahead and tell us about that one, Steve.
This is a resolution that simply states that the Department of Defense should declare that HIV status all by itself should not disqualify a person from military service. Does not take a position on whether or not a person with HIV status should be put in certain positions in the military. It's just that basically states that HIV status all by itself is no reason for people not to be able to serve their country and to be part of our armed forces.
Pretty straightforward. The next one, 107D, I'll let you tell us what it speaks to.
The two resolutions, or maybe the three, the first one I mentioned was stopping in automobiles and ordering people out of the car. The second one about not prosecuting pregnant women for losing their babies. And the last one, which we'll get to after the one we're about to talk about, they're all in our wheelhouse. The one that you're asking me about now is pretty technical, and it urges various governments to endorse and adopt the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Now, you can tell that this is not... The declaration is not one the ABA has written. It's a United Nations resolution. And our resolution says, well, the United Nations has promulgated this. We think that the United States and all of the entities of the United States should get behind it. and that Congress should come up with a plan to implement this. Not just enough to say, hey, we're with you, United Nations, but let's figure out how we're going to deal with indigenous people and do it right. And while we co-sponsored this, this is one kind of like immigration. It's kind of specialized. And if you ask most people what's in the declaration, they have a hard time. Most criminal justice folks can't tell you right off the top of their head what's there, but it's easy enough to read and to get a grasp on. And I think it's part, again, of making sure that indigenous people are not marginalized in the United States.
Well, thank you for that explanation, Steve, and helping make it accessible to the rest of us who don't have as technical expertise. So the final one that we were a co-sponsor on speaks to firearms in certain areas. So Steve, why don't you tell us about 111?
Yeah, this one was carefully negotiated between CJS, other entities, particularly the judicial entities in the ABA. And the resolution calls upon various governments to enact statutes, rules, and regulations to prohibit the possession and display of firearms by persons other than governmentally authorized military, law enforcement, or security personnel in and around specific areas where legislative debate is conducted or ballots cast. So I don't think it'll come as a surprise to anyone where this resolution comes from. It deals with the notion that folks can walk into legislative assemblies armed, particularly, you know, carrying firearms in the open in a way that can intimidate legislators and others who are coming there to petition the government for redress of their grievances from having free speech and a free vote. And similarly, it basically says people should not arm themselves and walk into places where voters are trying to vote in a way that could intimidate them. But it recognizes, and this is something the judges cared about, that we don't want to prevent our courthouses from being secure. And so if we have marshals or their equivalent who are duly authorized by various government entities to protect the courthouses and the judges, well, they're going to be able to do that. And the same, by the way, with the Capitol Police, they should, of course, be able to be armed in order to protect the Capitol. And the idea is that people who are authorized to carry firearms in these places, that's fine. But there's no reason for ordinary citizens to arm themselves in an open way and march into places where what is expected is a civilized debate or a fair and private opportunity to vote. We don't want intimidation. And we've seen just how the use of firearms in certain areas can, in fact, be intimidating. And I think that also is right within our wheelhouse of criminal justice, although it also has a lot to do with legislative debate and voting rights.
Absolutely. And it's really wonderful to see CJS being a part of addressing timely issues. Before we wrap up, you know, I want to let our listeners know that the next round of deadlines for resolution submissions like these is approaching. It will be in April this year, and there's more details on the website you can find. But Steve, what would you say to anyone listening who thinks they have an issue and is unsure of how to begin the process of getting CJS to address a policy or an issue that they are passionate about?
Let me answer that and also add one thing. It's very easy for anybody who's a member to ask CJS to take a look at an issue. All you have to do is email our executive director, who's Kevin Scruggs, and he's easy to find, and basically say, this is an issue, I think, that cries out for CJS to address. And no, it might be that we've already done it, that we already have policy and it's taken care of, in which case that would be the response. Or it's outside our area of expertise and we would refer it maybe to somebody else. Or we would address it and say, wow, good idea. You know, we want to know what issues out there that we haven't addressed and we should address. And I would add one other thing about the American Bar Association as a whole, not just CJS. you can tell from these resolutions we've just talked about that no single entity, I don't care where you are, no single entity can address a lot of the problems that are real world problems that relate to the rule of law writ large. The American Bar Association is amazing that way. When I sit in the House of Delegates, I am constantly learning. I'm addressing issues that I've known very little about, and they span the spectrum. And it's only a group like the American Bar Association that can do this because it has entities that span the spectrum of legal interests. And there's no state bar that has this kind of expertise, international, national, as well as local. But the American Bar Association, House of Delegates, does this twice a year. And it is quite amazing. And I think anybody who looks at this, just the resolutions we've talked about today, will see that expertise of various sorts gets called upon. And anybody who would read these resolutions, I think, would find that they've learned something. I certainly did.
That's excellent. Thank you for that insight, Steve. Let me just add on for our listeners. You spoke to maybe we already have done policy that addresses an issue that you're passionate about. And let me just tell you, listeners, that if you're trying to find that information, that CJS policy is available on our website. There's a dropdown that is policy. So you can search through that. You, as Steve said, also just reach out to the staff at the section, Kevin Scruggs or Linda Britton will be able to help you navigate that. But it is, at least from the 90s on, can be found on the website. So otherwise, we'll help you out there. And please reach out if there's something you would like CJS to address. So thank you again, Steve. Is there anything that we've missed before we wrap up?
I don't think so. I'd just like to thank you for the chance to talk about these. We're very proud of our work and glad to share it with every member of CJS.
Thank you for helping us demonstrate the leadership of CJS in these important issues. So thank you again. And thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of the Just Pod.